I trusted that intuitive prompt. That's the point. Trust, even though it doesn't make sense to you because you don't know where it's leading you. And a lot of the times what we want is not achieved in this linear way.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. I am excited that you're here today because my guest is Bridget Jackson Buckley. She is the author of The Gift of Crisis, and today she's going to be talking to us about how she used meditation to get through a financial crisis and into a life of purpose. She is incredibly wise and insightful, and we went over an hour in our conversation, so I couldn't include all of it in today's episode. I will be posting the additional, it's about between 10 and 15 minutes of content as a separate download on Wednesday, so be on the lookout for that. So let's learn a little bit more about Bridget Jackson Buckley. Bridget Jackson Buckley is an American author, blogger, memoirist, and interviewer. As a freelance writer, Bridget has written online articles for Examiner, Tiny Buddha, Recreate Your Life Story, Medium, Patheos, Thrive Global, and Gaia. She was the lead writer to launch Oprah Winfrey Network's Super Soul Sunday website, the 21-day Become What You Believe meditation, and 7 days to Restful Sleep for Oprah and Deepak's Guide to Whole Health, in addition to various articles for Super Soul Sessions 1 through 3. With a writing focus that includes spirituality, change, challenge, and transformation, Bridget's writing unexpectedly draws inward through her ability to convey complex spiritual concepts in a practical and accessible style. Bridget now resides in Los Angeles with her husband, 3 children, and miniature schnauzer, and enjoys working with individuals and organizations who are interested in conscious change, conscious business practices, conscious leadership, and empowerment. I am here with Bridget Jackson Buckley, and I'm so excited. Bridget is a writer with a capital W. You've written for some big time hitters here. Medium, Thrive Global Journal, Awareness, and drumroll, Own, Oprah Winfrey Network. This is great. This is great. I'm so excited. You have a book called The Gift of the Crisis, How I Used Meditation to Go from Financial Failure to a Life of Purpose. And I also read that you're a proponent of journaling, which I am also. So I'm very excited to talk to you about that. I also want to mention that you yourself have interviewed, again, some really big personal development people that this is very own, right? And all these people appear on her network. Eckhart Tolle, Iyanla VanZant, Deepak Chopra, Elizabeth Gilbert, Elizabeth Lesser. You are just, this is wonderful. This is like a treat. I'm yes, this is a treat.
I love the subject matter. So you gotta reach out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So tell us, because in your book synopsis, I'm just going to read this because it was written really well. It says that you reveal how to explore crisis as a tool for courageous change, regaining your self-esteem with self-love and self-compassion. The Gift of Crisis will show how repeated catastrophes can serve as a catalyst to uncover the underlying purpose, and how questions posed during a meditative state can reveal answers that can redirect your life. So I was wondering if maybe you could just take us back to like 2008 or the financial crisis, like kind of bring us into that story, like what propelled you on this path?
Okay, well, how can I sum that up? Okay, so we had in the book, The Gift of Crisis, my husband had just renovated like my childhood home, and it was a huge, huge project. And in 2005, we moved into the house, and then 3 months later, we got married after being together for several years. And then 3 months after that, he almost had a stroke. Like, he was hospitalized due to the symptoms for the onset of a stroke.
Wow.
As you can imagine, that pretty much like changed everything. It changed everything on our way forward, because at that time I was home with our second child, our daughter, McKenna. She was still a toddler at that time, and he was our primary source of income. Mm-hmm. So that was a major health scare and event, because it took him out of work for several months. Mm-hmm. With that situation, like we had a little bit of savings, but we went through it very quickly, you know, paying living expenses and food and everything. So it was like such a beautiful situation, took such an unanticipated, you know, immediate turn, and it just completely changed the trajectory of our lives, because we were unprepared to deal with a long-term health issue and being out of work for long-term. So it was during that time that, you know, that was extremely stressful, mm-hmm. very stressful. And while I am a huge proponent of therapy, and I would have gone in a second, could we afford it, but I couldn't afford it.
Right. So
did have at my disposal was the fact that I love to read, and I could always go to the public library, which, oh my gosh, I would do a commercial for the public library. Love the public library. I have like 5 public library cards. But I would go to the library, you know, and I would pick up our oldest child, who was in elementary school. His school was right by a library, so we would stop all the time, and I would literally just walk through the spirituality and self-help aisles and just kind of look and see which books jumped out at me. Because I just, you know, I felt like I needed some help. You know, I went to reading, and then I had the semi-support of a spiritual community, because I would have gone to this spiritual center more, but our youngest, I couldn't put our child in the childcare. Like, she didn't want to stay. So I was very limited in what I could do. So when I listened to New Thought spiritual leaders, you know, and read books from psychologists, spiritual teachers, self-help books, and all of that, I noticed there was one underlying message, like a commonality in all of the books, and it was about the benefit of meditation. And so then, you know, I saw a documentary with, you know, a spiritual teacher on it, and he was talking about meditation, and I remember looking at him thinking, gosh, he looks so healthy and vibrant and and like,
I do have a
glow. Well, like, maybe he knows what he's talking about. So I said, okay, I'll give it a try. So that was pretty much like, it was like the true beginning, because I started to meditate in the traditional sense of sitting quietly for a period of time. And I started to notice, with a consistent practice, really a calming of my nervous system. Feeling calmer and more grounded and able to deal with this crisis that we were in. I mean, obviously I didn't just sit down and start meditating and then everything was just perfect.
Right.
But I stayed with it for a period of time. So really quickly, and then, like, you know, the years passed and we ended up losing the house, which was a devastating experience for us, as I outline in chapter 1 of the book. And it was about that time, like right before we lost it, that I started another idea in the books that I was reading was to ask for guidance. Mm-hmm. In my meditation session, asking for guidance and to see what would come through. So that's how that all started.
So what does, I mean, you kind of gave us a glimpse. What is meditation to you? What does it look like? How do you practice it? Because I think a lot of us think of meditation as you said, sitting in silence. But we also think that it is, in addition to sitting in silence, not having any thoughts in our head, like somehow we're supposed to just be blank up here. and then the minute we get a thought and we get distracted, we feel defeated. Like, I just feel like this is not working. So yeah. What is meditation to you?
Well, I mean, that's there, but When I first started, it was a serious push and pull. I mean, I would sit down and immediately I'm going into like, can I just win like a shopping spree to Costco? I mean, like I was all over the place, you know, but I kept with it. I kept with it. And I would say, to answer your question, what is meditation? Yes, you can meditate in the traditional sense where you sit quietly with the intention to quiet, calm, and clear your mind. Absolutely. But I think also you can really tailor it you need. I mean, when I sat down to meditate on our bed, like I had a very, very sincere intention to connect, I felt like I wanted to be inspired, like I needed some help, like I needed some guidance. And I was willing to sit quietly and to, you know, to stay with that practice. So at first it was difficult. I mean, there were lots of, I mean, the thoughts were just like a runaway train, you know? So I started a little bit, like maybe like 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And sometimes the entire meditation was just thoughts, you know? And then the next day I do it and it's like, oh my gosh, I noticed like I had like a period of silence for like a minute, you know? So what ends up happening is that those periods of silence begin to widen. And then you're like, wow, I was deep into meditation for like 5 minutes. And as you continue with it, it expands. The silence starts to get louder, if you will. And you also notice that, gosh, what is up with this pattern of these incessant thoughts that keep coming up? Like you start to notice the patterns in your thoughts. The continued contemplative practice that I was doing and reading, I understood that thoughts are really just thoughts. Like I'm really condensing this. And that you can also use that time to just look at what is coming up from your subconscious. Those are those thoughts. It's primarily what's coming up, your thoughts of fear and lack, and that you have so much trust in doubt. You have so much trust in financial hardship. Like, I know that we're not going to be able to meet this. Like, you can have that time to look at that. And then as you continue with the practice, you start to see that you can really just let those thoughts just drift by. You don't have to jump onto them and grab them and like, yes, I want, tell me more. Like you can just let them go by. That is one of the main purposes of meditation. There's so many benefits of it, but just understanding that you don't have to follow the thoughts that you think, especially self-sabotaging ones.
Exactly.
That are keeping you in a really stuck, small, egoic mind and egoic response. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning, for a period of time, it was push and pull, like I said. And then as I continued, I would notice that I could sit for like 30 minutes and, I mean, just be so deep that when I come out, like I don't even hear anything, and I come out of it, and it's like, wow, like, where have I been? As you train your body, as you continue, your body is becoming trained to follow your consciousness, and meditation does help with an elevation or expansion, if you will, in consciousness. And so it starts to feel like exercise. Like when you don't do it, your body is feeling that you're missing it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I would say most importantly at the beginning to start, your thoughts are going to be all over the place, but is your response with anything that's difficult in the beginning to just say, oh, this is difficult, I can't, and I'm done, you know? Or will you, like any other thing, practice, you know, whether it's writing, whether it is running, whether it is teaching, like practice. Meditation is a practice that you come back to repeatedly until it no longer feels like a practice, but feels like a way of life.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that one of the key things that you said is that we don't have to believe all of these thoughts that are rambling through our mind all the time, that most of these thoughts aren't even true. And so that when you get into that space of meditation and you really do become the observer of your thoughts, and you can start to question, like, is that thought, where did that thought come from? And is that thought true? And more than likely it's not. And you can just let it go. I think we're so used to believing, as you said, like believing in like, this will be horrible, believing all the doubt. We're so used to that. And so that when we get into that meditative state, it helps us to just observe and not grab and hold on.
Yeah, it's a practice to help you retrain your mind.
Yeah.
Because it's not only that, is it true, but is it mine? So much what's in our subconscious, like what the subconscious rules so much of what we do in life. It is ruling so much of what we do, our choices, what we believe, what we value, you know, how we behave. And if you don't even know that it's there, you are living an unconscious, or you may have heard, unawake life. You don't even know what's ruling your life. And so one part of meditation, in addition to all of the physiological benefits, the physical health benefits, there is this unearthing of these voices, the conditioning in your subconscious that was placed there when you were like 5 years old, when you didn't have an opportunity to choose. It was like people who loved you, who had their own beliefs and values, perhaps that may have been unexamined, situations in your environment, maybe that you interpreted a certain way, that, you know, the energy of the environment that you were in and the way that it affects your energy field. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on. And so meditation, it helps to bring all of that up to the surface so that you can be aware of what is going on within the depths of you, so that you can consciously choose, does this serve me? Believe in this value? Like, is this true for me? Is this authentic to me? Is this the way I want my life to be directed? It is really such a good tool for you to examine, so that you are consciously making choices of what you want to create and bring into your life, as opposed to being on autopilot.
Right. Yeah. And I wonder, because you also mentioned that you would set an intention for meditation. And that's something I never really even considered. I guess maybe I don't meditate all the time like you do, I'm sure. But I don't know that when I sit to meditate, if I set an intention, I think that's really important. Because sometimes, and I'm just speaking for myself, it can be when those thoughts bubble up in my head during meditation, they can be very painful. And I just don't even want to sit there with them anymore. I just want to walk away from it.
Yeah, I totally get it. You know, but it's like, I was talking with a friend. She had some issues going with her air conditioning unit that's placed in her window. Mm-hmm. And she thought that there was a little bit of mold under there. So the analogy is, her choice was to just continue using the air conditioner, knowing that there was a little bit of mold. Or does she want to pull the whole thing out and really look and really see what is underneath? What do I need to do to get this stuff cleared out? Or do I just want to leave that little bit there and pretend like I don't see it? That's essentially what is going on here. I mean, and we can see it playing out in the outer world. There is some mold present. Believe me, I understand that there are some uncomfortable aspects of ourselves, that we have experienced some uncomfortable things. I have too. I mean, like, throughout this whole experience that I write about in the book, there were some not so pretty parts of me. Mm-hmm. You know, but it wasn't really until like I really, really looked at it, you know, that it's like, wow, like that is such an unconscious, toxic, healthy way of responding. I don't know if you've read the book, but like, I wrote about a really ugly incident in chapter 4. I mean, where we had a house guest come, and I was like, we were in the midst of financial hardship, and I didn't want that to be known. Like, it was safely protected within our family. Nobody knew how bad things were. But to have a house guest, an unexpected house guest, oh my gosh, like, I made her so uncomfortable because I wanted her to leave. And of course, there were some other things that she was doing that I felt were just not conducive of a respectful house guest, I'll say. But that whole experience just showed how when you are, you know, when you are really not dealing with your own issues and how you can project them onto other people, you can perceive it as if someone is doing something to you and you're the victim when it really is you creating your reality, you know, and you really not wanting to face what is yours. So much of the gift of the crisis was really looking at myself, why I was doing some of the things that I was doing, and really, really, really honestly examining where this stuff was coming, not only where it was coming from, but like how I was continuing to perpetrate it and putting so much energy into keeping, you know, difficulties going in my life.
I wonder, is that why a lot of people feel fatigued or exhausted because they're putting so much energy into these thoughts and creating these stories? I think it's so funny when people say, I'm not creative. And I'm thinking, I think everyone is very creative because we're always creating stories about what other people are thinking or what's going to happen. Or
well, we are creative beings.
Right. Yeah.
We're always creating. And like I said, you can be creating unconsciously. Mm-hmm. You can be creating consciously.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't think I answered that. Like you spoke about intention. Okay. Well, yes. When I first started, I had a couple meditation sessions when I was like, please give me the Super Lotto winning numbers. I'm being honest. But then, you know, with a spiritual practice, you know, the spirituality, the path of the heart, the path of awakening, what is the self and what is not the self? It is not so much about getting, but it's about letting go. It's about letting go with what no longer serves you, so that you can truly, like letting go what is not truly the self, so you can be your authentic self, consciously creating. That's what this is about. So as I moved through that and came to understand that even more over the years, the intention became sometimes to connect with my heart. Sometimes the intention was just tell me what I need to know at this moment. What is it that I need to know? Sometimes the intention was give me guidance on what is my next right action in this situation. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it was just like, I have physically exerted myself trying to manipulate the situation, trying to control the outcome, trying to make it be what I wanted it to be. And it's just not working. So I surrender. What is the next step? So again, once I got to that point, asking those type of empowering questions, that to me felt more of a sincere attempt in connecting with the heart than the previous of give me the winning Super Lotto numbers.
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of people have I'm sure God has gotten a lot of prayers for winning Lotto numbers.
Well, because it was just so expensive, so interesting. And I mean, there's a lot that I could say, but there is just, you know, when you're experiencing this, the type of financial situation that we experience, it's like whatever you're dealing with, whatever you feel like is so evidently missing in your life is a call for you to express that. I felt so, what is the word? Like not abundant. Right. Everything was leaving, you know, like we don't have any money. I can't buy anything. Like we can't go anywhere, you know, like everything is just abandoning me. Like, and it was in that experience that I learned that abundance is not just money. It's not just winning the lotto. Like abundance comes in so many forms. It's health. Creativity. It's love. It's receiving love. It's giving compassion, you know, not being judgmental, noticing the abundance of the vegetation around me, noticing how people were so generous to us. And so just that shift in mindset, like even after a while, when when physically we were still in the same place after we lost the house and moved into a different living situation, after a couple of years, I started to feel more abundant, not because of something that happened on the outer, but what was happening on the inner. Mm-hmm. On the inner, as you start to feel more abundance, more love, you start to experience that in your external reality. Mm-hmm. I don't know how familiar you are with these, but the outer is a reflection of the inner.
Yeah.
Feeling so unloving, that is an opportunity for you to express more love in your life. Mm-hmm. If you're feeling like you don't have anything, that's an opportunity for you to give what you can, where you can, with what you have from where you are.
Right.
You know, because a lot of the times I thought, well, I don't even have money to donate to charity, but I had time. Mm. You know, I could donate time, I could make connections. You understand what I'm getting at?
Yeah. I've seen that. I've experienced that a lot in my life. If I'm complaining about, oh, I'm not getting the attention that I want, or I'm not getting so-and-so, they're not calling me like I think they should. Well, am I reaching out to them? Yeah. Myself? And usually the answer is no.
Yeah.
So it is a message that you need to be doing what you feel you're lacking, I think is what you're...
Or being informs the doing.
Being informs the doing.
Yeah. And obviously meditation, while it's not the only practice, it worked for me. The being informs the doing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's yes, of course, we live in this, you know, we live in this realm of action. You know, you do need to do things, but there needs to be a balance between doing and being and forcing and allowing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know when you're forcing because it feels stressful. You know, it just feels like things aren't working. And you know when you're allowing, because when you're allowing, you're giving room for other people and other, outcomes to come in that you perhaps didn't expect. Mm.
I think sometimes when, if you think of allowing, people think that's just being passive or lazy or useless, because we've been taught that if you want something, you gotta make a move, you gotta act on it, you always constantly have to do. But sometimes in all of the doing, you lose a sense of yourself, you exhaust yourself. And so it comes to a point where you kind of just have no choice but to relax and allow things. But that's a hard concept to grasp.
Well, and that was, I give another example of that in the book of when I did that, and I was just literally exhausted. And I was really, I felt internally like this intuitive prompt to volunteer, which of course logically makes no sense, because, and you know, if you don't have a job, why are you volunteering?
Right.
But that was just another way that, you know, the presence was speaking to me. That is a part of trusting what is within you, the divine guidance that comes through us in the form of our intuition, curiosity, and wanting to lean in a direction, even though it does not make any sense. I kept feeling this like volunteer. And after a period of time, I started getting a little bit of work from volunteering, but it made no sense, but I trusted that intuitive prompt. That's the point. Trust, even though it doesn't make sense to you because you don't know where it's leading you. And a lot of the times what we want is not achieved in this linear way. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have to trust what's coming through you, you know. And I ended up volunteering and then getting a little bit of work. And then it was like, okay, well, I want more and more and more. And I was really, 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 really pushing. Like, are there any open full-time positions? Are there, you know, so I was kind of exhausting myself, like you just mentioned. And then finally, like when we were at this point when like we needed some money to put towards rent, and I could, there was no opening at the spiritual center that I came home one afternoon and I was just in tears because I was like, okay, I've done everything I can do. Like, if it's time for us to move, if we're not supposed to be here, fine. And I was completely in surrender.
Mm.
And my body felt light and open. And I was just in total acceptance of what was right in front of me.
And you know, that reminds me of Bridget, like what you just said, we tend to attach to a particular outcome. Like, yeah, we want this to be the outcome. We want this to happen. And that might not be for our best interest.
Right.
And we're just overworking and exhausting, stressing ourselves out, trying to get something that if we had it, would probably stress ourselves out even more. Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what I wanted to say about that is because you said sometimes surrendering and allowing is equated with being lazy. But it, I mean, I felt so, so strongly in that surrendering. Like I was, like I said, I was in tears, which meant that there was a release going on. And so I was just like, okay. I mean, everything was light. And I mean, literally like the next day, I think when I went into work, the office manager called me into her office and I was like, what now? And she was like, surprisingly, we have an opening to offer you about this. And so I'm like, what? And so then I got it in the book. While we cannot tangibly say like the release in my energy, you know, was correlating with my experience of this opening now at the center, still there's no way you can't tell me that they're not connected. It's like the divine presence, the divine intervention. And so it was from that I started working like 20 hours, and that eventually led to a full-time position in accounting.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
so it's, things can come about in unexpected ways if you just kind of relax a bit. So that you can see that I was doing and I was allowing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I can remember after I graduated from college, obviously I really needed a job, and I kept getting like this, like intuitively, I kept hearing, you need to call your father. And at that time we weren't really talking. We didn't really have a close relationship. And I was like, well, what does that have to do with anything? Whatever. I mean, he'll call me on my birthday, you know? So it just got so strong. And so I called dad, and, you know, we had like a little short conversation, and the next day I got a call to come in for an interview.
Okay. You hadn't been talking and you spoke with your dad and you had like a release of some emotional energy around your relationship with your father is what you're saying.
Well, no, I had the intuition to call.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say a voice because then I sound like I'm crazy, but there was like a voice that was saying, you know, you need to call your father. Like, in order for this job to open up for you, you're going to need to call your father. That was the message. But I was thinking, well, what does my father have to do with like getting a job? This is ridiculous. Like, no. But I ended up calling him. And then it was like the next day, I got the phone call. And I've had other instances in my life like that, where something, usually it's, I need to reconnect with someone. You need to call and say hi or check in. And then once I do that, like something will open up for me. It's just, it's crazy.
Okay. So that is something for you. I mean, not necessarily to say like, if I hear a voice, I'm crazy, because we have been trained to discount our internal guidance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm saying about retraining the mind. Like, just because someone outside of you may have said, this is crazy for you to hear a voice, who, how, like, based on what? We receive internal guidance all the time. It's just, it's your free will choice of what you choose to follow. And also, you know, like, where, like, what is influencing that, you know? So you have now several examples of that. There is something in this when you hear this internal guidance and you take action on that guidance.
Mm-hmm.
The more you take action on it, the more trust you build for it.
Right. Yeah.
So that is your signal. That is your, you know, like your spiritual breadcrumb. Like, I already know, like if I keep having a thought about something and it just won't go, like I know, it does not need to make sense to me at this point, because I've had enough experiences where that's how this book came about. How this book came about, because I kept having a thought that I should type up some entries from my journal when I was writing in my journal throughout meditation. I kept having this thought, like, to type this up. And of course, me being primarily left brain throughout my entire life, wanting a logical answer for everything, I was like, okay, I'll type it up. So I finished typing it up. You know, I felt light and, you know, and then I had this thought, you should ask, you know, Beth, if she knows any agents. But the egoic mind will come in and say, why would you call her? Why would I call my dad? What does that have to do with anything? And then you can talk yourself out of your own blessing.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so I did ask her, do you know? And I just knew she was going to say no. She, it worked out. The book got published. Such a non-traditional, non-linear way.
Yeah.
And this stuff happens to me, like I said, not because I'm lucky, but because I'm really, well, I have really leaned into this trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that life is for me and that we have help. It's like, are we going to respond to the way the presence speaks to us through our own internal knowing?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
That everything is rosy and perfect and that you never have any problems and that you don't take action. But there is, you know, I have structured my life under, you know, the knowing that there is a bigger purpose to what's happening here and that there is a higher intelligence around me and making up this planet, and that I don't know everything, nor I have to figure everything out. I can do what I know how to do from where I am, but I can also ask for guidance.
Hmm. You mentioned journal, that you journal during meditation. So how does that work? You have a computer in front of you, or a pen and paper? What does that look like?
So when I would sit down, I would normally do my meditation where I had, like, I would start with prayer, you know, an affirmative prayer. And then I would have a period where I would sit quietly, the traditional meditation.
Yeah.
When my body felt like it wanted to ask for guidance, then I would just pose a question. And so I did that several times. And I was like, at first, kind of like you, like, what is this? What am I hearing? Where is this coming from? But then I really, really, really honed in on, okay, how do I feel? What is the pattern that's coming through in my mind? Is it loving? Is it fear-based?
Mm-hmm.
Is it me, like, talking to myself, telling me what to do? After a period of time, I was like, okay, it's consistently loving. It's always coming in, like, on this left side, like, right here. I can't remember what's said. Okay, so let me just bring a pad, and I'll sit on the bed and cross my legs, and in the dark, I'll just scribble out what's coming through meditation. And then after it's over, the next morning after I drop the kids at school, I will rewrite what came through. So okay. That's my process.
Yeah, yeah.
For like over a year, I still do it.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like channeling.
Well, it does, but I wouldn't really say that it was that. I never felt like it was some foreign thing. It feels like it has, like, it's a part of my higher self floating in, like something. Is opened up within me that I'm able to just access a different part of myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now I totally trust that, because I did that, like I said, for over a year, and I put it away.
Mm. Like,
do anything with it. And then when I was doing one of these interviews that you mentioned, I was interviewing someone who wrote a book, and I asked her, how did you get all this information? And so she said, I channeled most of it, and it was like a light bulb went off. And I was like, oh my God, I have like all of these notebooks from my meditations.
Wow.
I took them out at that time and reread them, and every single thing that came through in the meditation was completely applicable to everything that I had experienced. That it was just so, so relevant, not only for me, but also like for everyone. It was like just so much universal truth in it. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, like this could be helpful to so many people. Like, it wasn't just for me. And so then after that, that's when I got the the internal prompt, you should type this up.
Mm.
And that's how that happened.
Bridget, do you think that every crisis is a message to us?
I do. I think that every crisis can deliver a gift if you can be in a state that you're willing to extract a gift and not let the crisis hijack your mind and hijack your soul.
Hmm.
There is something there for you. And that does not mean that you may not feel like, well, I don't want this situation. This is not something I want to deal with. Because, you know, stuff still comes up in my life and I'm like, I would really rather not be dealing with this. I've had enough experience to know that feel the feelings of what you're feeling. You could feel afraid. You could feel uncertain. You could feel very uncomfortable. Feel those feelings instead of trying to gloss over them or push them away. Feel them, you know, so that you can move through them. And as you move through the experience, there's an integration that takes place. And then you could say, okay, what else is there for me here? What am I not seeing? What is this situation trying to teach me? You know, and that practice helps you to develop resilience.
Hmm.
You know, because you could have gone through a crisis situation. So when something else comes about, you're not just overcome by fear because you've already dealt with something and you see how much grace was afforded to you and how you move through that. And so you know that whatever adversity comes, you can deal with it because you have these practices to help you center yourself, to ground yourself. You have your meditation, you have your journaling so that you can look at what the situation is bringing up for you. You know, you have your walking outside in nature that helps to soothe you, going to the beach, whatever it is, chanting, whatever it is. But these practices help you move through these difficult situations so that you can lighten yourself, you know, for a better word, to be open to receive what the situation is trying to show you or give to you.
Yeah, it's why do so many of us, or I guess we're trained because that being open to receive what the situation is teaching us, I don't know if that's something that we're taught to do when we're,
no, I mean, unless we, no, we're not. And I want to be clear, like I'm not talking about like you lose your house and then you're sitting on the couch like, okay, what's here for us?
Right.
You know, you might not necessarily be like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, but you might be like, okay, I have to accept we can't keep this house. Like we're going to lose the house. I have to accept that. This is where we are. I feel very afraid, but I'm going to continue going forward, even with my legs trembling.
That's the hard part is accepting.
Yeah.
Like learning to accept. How do you do, and that probably has to go with, goes hand in hand with letting go, as you mentioned earlier, but that accepting that I'm going to lose my house, accepting that I'm sick, accepting, you know, it's good Lord.
Well, I mean, I was in resistance for the losing the house for, you know, for some time. Like we were all, I mean, so clenched, so tight, so much resistance, so much fear.
Mm.
Put your attention on amplifies.
Yeah.
I mean, totally inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
How, I mean, and then we were dealing with all kinds of stuff like, you know, the 2008 financial aid crisis, the bundling of the loans, you send in one money order, the loan is sold, the amount you owe changes. Like there was all kinds of stuff going on. So it was just, you know, a very difficult situation. But once we accepted, okay, this is it, this is going down, then, you know, it's okay, how are we going to find someplace else to live? You know, we have, our credit is ruined. What's going to happen and stuff? But we found, you know, a property owner who said, when I had difficult times, somebody gave me a second chance.
Hmm.
So we were able to find someplace else to move. And it's like, I don't know. It's just, you just keep going, but not in resistance, and know that even the very situation that comes about that you thought you would simply die. If
yeah.
like, if this goes down, I'm just going to stop breathing. But I didn't. Yeah. I didn't. Yeah. You know, even when the lights were turned out and we put the last box in the truck and pulled off, we were still breathing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We thought it was like going to kill us, didn't. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it was from that, it's like, okay, now I can go into a pandemic. Okay. This is really interesting. This is really different. Okay, all right. So let's adapt. Let's be malleable. Okay, we got to make some adjustments to our routine. I don't like it. I want to go see my friend. You know, you're moving through all of this. How can I use this time? I can get some rest. I can work on creative projects. I can be compassionate and gentle with myself, because like the foreclosure crisis, I know that this is temporary. This is not going to last.
Right. Yeah.
I know that while this seems highly inconvenient and devastating for a lot of business owners, there is still something that I can take from this. There is still a gift in this moment. So once I move through all of my, then I get to a place of acceptance, and then I can say, mm-hmm. I want to explore a new genre of writing.
Right, yeah.
You know, so there's, you know, I think I want to finish that screenplay. Oh, I want to, you know?
Right, yeah.
I got to put all my attention on 24 hours a day of this is horrible. I'm going to put my attention on what I want to create and what I can do. And I'm going to be open to the people, circumstances, and situations showing up that can help me to create what I want to consciously create.
Yeah, that you bring up a good point about just paying attention in those times of crisis, because yeah, there are people that are going to show up and there are going to be opportunities that will open, but if you're not aware, you can miss them if you're stuck on focusing on the pain of the pain.
You absolutely can, yeah.
Yeah. So I was talking to a psychologist recently, and he mentioned how we tend to like overestimate our reaction, our possible reaction to things. Like if we think, oh, if my dog dies, I'm going to die. And then, you know, your dog dies and yeah, you're going to be sad, but you'll get over it. And I think when you were speaking just now, it just reminded me how a lot of times when we're in situations or we can see a situation coming our way, we tend to just overestimate the pain and our being able to get through that situation. And that totally just keeps us in this state of like stress, and in reality it's not going to be as bad as you think.
I mean it's not to discount that some situations, well, we'll say like unexpected situations that are kind of blindsided, like your child, something happens to your child, obviously you're not like, that's not going to be as, but you know, something that you can see coming, oh my gosh, if this possibly happens, yes, we're just going to die. I'd absolutely agree with that there is just that pre-event fear that basically sits in our head is oftentimes worse than what we're imagining. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that state of mind, when you're so afraid of it, could be so debilitating, and it affects your abilities to make situations that can actually be helpful to you in that situation.
Right. Yeah. Do you think that people, if you're in a situation that might not be a crisis, like you might not be losing your home, but let's say that you are at a job that you are just always unhappy at, always unhappy, is that a sign that maybe you need to think, it's like pushing you, it's a message, maybe you need to explore something else?
Well, I would say a couple things come to mind. I mean, the easy answer I think that people are sometimes reaching for is, I should just quit. But wherever you are, there you are.
Yeah.
So what is it? Because are you giving over your power by saying, if they just change this practice or policy at work, then I will feel happy? Are you generally unhappy? Like what, you know, what is going on? Because really you are responsible for your happiness, not the job. circumstance? What do you bring to the situation? And it's also not to say that everything is your fault. I mean, we are creating our experiences, but you could be in a situation where somebody is being mean to you, so to speak, and mirroring something back to you. Are you being mean to yourself? Are you seeing your internal talk exhibited to you through these unhappy external circumstances at work? Are you in this situation because what you believe about yourself is that this is the best you can do or get? So what is really underneath all that? That's what I mean when I say, like, really be authentic and really like drill down, really drill down, like where this stuff is coming from, to really examine. And another thing that you could do is, in your meditation, you can meditate what is coming up for you at work. What is the source of the unhappiness? What am I attaching to this situation at work? What, you know, just pose some questions to see what floats up in your awareness during your meditative state for you to contemplate that.
Can we talk a little bit about the, if you find that people are often mean to you, that's often a reflection of how you are to yourself?
Yeah, I think I definitely think it can be. Like, again, we are all mirrors of each other. Like, show me your friends.
Right. Yeah.
Who you are.
Yeah.
You know, like, who are the people in your life? How are they treating you? Like what is going on? You know, I absolutely do think that if it's a situation where you are having an interaction with someone where you are really like being triggered, that is for you. That has nothing to do with them. They are touching upon something that is unresolved, unhealed within you. One of the grad students that I had to work with, oh my gosh, I felt like she was so bitchy. I did. And I was just like, every time we had to have a meeting, I was like I sat down in the chair, like I arrived with tension. And then one evening, I was standing at home before we lost the house, and I was washing the dishes, and I was thinking about this, you know, this coworker, and I was like, what is it that, and what, and I was like, I can be bitchy.
Oh, yeah.
I can be very, very bitchy. Oh my gosh, like, that's me. And it's like, once I had that realization, it completely changed my interaction with her. Mm-hmm. Softened so much. It did not mean that I wanted to be best friends.
Right.
I even wanted to hang out, but it was just like this mirror image of what I look like, the, you know, the external barriers, the bitchiness. Right. Like, wow. So again, a gift.
Yeah, that's a gift. That's a hard gift to accept.
And this is why, you know, I talked about this, or I said, mentioned this earlier, like, you will see some not so pretty things about yourself, but, you know, reassess and reevaluate, and like, ooh, that's not serving me. I need to let that go.
I've had that happen to me several times where I was just like, why is this person so rude and short with me? And not only that person, but that person. And then I just start, you know, reflecting and paying attention to my own behavior. And I'm like, oh, I see. Yeah, I do the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, you can definitely see. And even if you take from just the immediate, if you look at the collective, like, it just seems like we are in an epic moment of so much dishonesty, like, shown to us, like, through the media, you know, what we see. Political arenas, and of course, this is a simple, but, and it's so bothersome. So it can pose the internal question of, where am I being dishonest to myself in my life?
Yes.
Being dishonest to.
I find that, yeah. If you know what, I think it's so interesting. If I ask someone, like, what are some qualities that you just dislike in people? those same qualities they have themselves.
Exactly.
They don't like those qualities about themselves either.
Exactly. Oh yeah, I can see that real quickly about myself. But it's also the opposite, the qualities that we admire.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You cannot even recognize it if you don't have it within yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Is this why parent-child relationships are so, can be so tense? Because you can see, and I'm not a mother, you're a mother.
Mm-hmm.
You could see.
Like sections dedicated to the children and what okay. they've shown me.
Yeah. Yeah. But even just as a daughter, I could see how I embody some of my parents' great qualities, and I also embody some of their not so great qualities.
Yeah.
I'm sure growing up they could see both those qualities in me, and that would cause some tension and, you know, our relationship.
Yeah. I've dealt with that too with my parents, where I'm like, oh my gosh, why?
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, I am very, very similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exhibiting the same behavior just in a different way.
Bridget, I can't believe we're out of time.
Yeah.
That was a great discussion. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. This was very enlightening. You're very wise, very full of knowledge, encouraging. So I really appreciate that you are here. Can you tell us where we can find you?
Well, you can go to my website, bjbuckley.com. I also have writing on Medium. I haven't posted in a while. I've just been working on other projects, but that's there. I did a Gift of Crisis video summit on YouTube.
Ooh.
That under my name, where I interviewed 5 people that are in this, you know, kind of new thought genre, talking about conversations similar to what we just had. The Gift of Crisis has a Facebook page. And of course, there's the book, The Gift of Crisis. You can find that wherever books are sold.
Read her book, ladies and gentlemen, The Gift of Crisis by Bridget Jackson Buckley.
I really enjoy talking to Bridget. I could just talk to her for hours. So be on the lookout for the additional content that I will post on Wednesday. And also visit zazo.com on Sunday to read my big takeaways from our conversation. And definitely check out Bridget's websites, her personal website, and then her YouTube video. And of course, read her book, The Gift of Crisis. Next week, I have another meditator. Her name is Dr. Christine Kissinger. I hope I'm not saying it properly, because I remember not saying it properly when I interviewed her. And she is also going to be talking to us about the power of meditation. So look forward to seeing you on Wednesday for the bonus Bridget Jackson Buckley content, and then next Saturday for my conversation with Dr. Christine Kissinger. Okay, thank you so much for joining me. Bye-bye.